Hello, you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. It's Tuesday, the 28th of April, 2009, and I'm your host, Harold Fenton. Tonight, swine flu. Is it a pandemic? Is it an epidemic? Is it an emergency? Or is it merely media hype? Well, we'll be looking at the situation here in Australia and in Mexico as the official death toll continues to mount. We'll be looking at alternatives to the use of antiviral medication to deal with influenza. And we'll be looking at the question of whether the cure that is being offered in the form of drugs such as Tamiflu and Relenza could actually be worse than the disease. I'll be joined by my regular guest, Josh Jackson, and we'll be getting into a few other topics tonight. We'll be looking at the recent publication of a book by an Australian scientist who questions the official view on climate change and global warming, Ian Plimmer. We'll also be looking at recent claims from an Australian conservation group that Australia would be better off reducing its population by about two-thirds. And we'll be considering what the potential of that could really be for our community and our society. And as always, we welcome our guests and look forward to your continued patronage of the site. So, without further ado, we'll continue with the show. Josh Jackson, welcome to the show.
G'day, Harold. How are you, mate?
Look, I am superb. I'm a little bit sort of mentally incompetent today for some unknown reason. Could be the swine has infected me.
You're coughing, sneezing.
I think I've been oinking.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Little tail growing out of your coccyx.
Yeah, well, let's not talk dirty. Look, Josh, tonight, we've got this global emergency. What are we going to do?
Look, it's huge, and honestly, the media is really hyping this up. I've known about it for about 2 weeks. When I first heard about it, it started going viral on Twitter. That's when I next found out about it. I try to always be, like a good Cub Scout. I learned how to make a woggle out of twigs, and I learned how to be prepared. So,
of course, as we should, and like we should all be prepared. Totally agree.
Absolutely. So, it's always good for our listeners to go out to the shopping centre while there's still food on the shelves, and calmly. I'm not saying this happened, but just have a stock of a month's supply, because waves of pandemics usually flow within a month past, or they die out, or things happen. But it's good to always be able to quarantine your family and protect them. Whether this is a scare, which I believe it's probably more fear-based to drive up stocks in the pharmaceutical industries and to collapse the last of the economies, like the Mexican economy, which is absolutely in dire straits. So there's plenty to talk about.
Okay, yeah. Well, I mean, certainly, prevention, protection, all those things are important. I think it's quite interesting to note the pharma companies that are involved in medications and vaccinations are doing really well out of this. An article here from The Age from a couple of days ago says investors have flocked to Melbourne drug developer Biota. That's Melbourne. That's an Australian company. Melbourne drug developer Biota, after governments around the world considered tapping into stockpiles of the company's antiviral Relenza to combat swine flu outbreak. Shares in Biota, which has licensed the drug to pharmaceutical giant GlaxoSmithKline, skyrocketed 77%. I mean, look, people are doing really well out of this, Josh.
You could almost write a 007 film about this sort of
well,
stuff. You know, it's very open to conspiratorial manipulation. Absolutely.
Well, you know, we see a global machine clicking to motion at the mere whiff of a disease epidemic. You know, whenever there's any sign of it, this giant system clicks in, and we're led to believe that that's for our benefit, that that's being done to protect us. But when you see giant changes in share markets and stuff like that, you really do have to apply some skepticism, and you really have to. And of course, you won't find that from the media. The media aren't skeptical about that. You won't find any questioning of that. There are a couple of articles out in the media that I've seen that have said that there are conspiracy theorists, you know, theorizing about what's all behind this. They love to use that phrase, as we've discussed many times. You know, they love to use that phrase to sort of water down, you know, dampen down questions.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like there's no such thing as three people talking, you know, which is, folks, the definition of a conspiracy.
Well, we know that conspiracies occur all the time in business, especially in the share markets, to drive share prices up and drive them down, to do all their put trades and their you know, the different trades that they do to profit from shares either going down or shares going up.
Folks, as someone said to me today, more people died today of falling from ladders globally. Than the swine flu. You know, it is potential. It has the potential to be a pandemic, such as anything. But look, yearly we see something like 200,000 deaths in the United States alone from the standard flu. The standard flu. You know, we have worldwide, I think it's one something, at least 1 million people die a year of the standard flu.
Well, flu affects elderly people much more severely, people who are weakened from other conditions. You know, flu is something that if you're already weakened for any reason can result in death, but it's always in that, you know, it's that end of the population that are more vulnerable. Of course, the difference from what we have heard from Mexico is that it does seem to be killing younger people, so we do have to take that into account.
I think it's actually quite counterintuitive. The very young and the very old survive. It's the young and healthy who have a very good immune system. Their immune systems hyper-react, and their immune system almost attacks themselves out of hyper-action, if you know what I mean.
Yes. Okay, that's certainly one of the factors. Now, one of the things that I really want to focus on tonight is, I mean, of course, we don't know whether this is a pandemic. That we see a lot of evidence that there isn't a clear definition even of what it is these people have got. I mean, they keep talking about tests that are being done, but none of these tests seem to be conclusive. Now, that's a very important point because, you see, When you get right down to it, it is actually not that easy to identify a virus. And I do think that there is a lot of exaggeration and hype around the idea that a particular, you know, infection, when you get someone coming to the doctor and they're ill and they take a sample, that they can, you know, absolutely confidently identify that as being one particular virus. I'm deeply skeptical of that, because if you actually look at the news as it comes out, they always say probable. They've been saying that over and over again. Oh, it looks like this. It looks like that. As we know, flu viruses mutate all the time anyway.
Oh, they do.
So I mean, every time it's actually been through a host, but by the time it moves to the next person, it may not be the same virus.
No, it's very probable. Like they like you said, the probable word always comes up. For instance, Mexico, 152 probable deaths, they say, and 1,614 suspected infections. Confirmed infections in Britain, 2, Canada, 6, 10 to 12 suspected, Spain, 1, 26 suspected. You know, it's this sort of probable, suspected language, but you know, I mean, this is what great stories are made of, and this is why the media latches onto these. Not to say that people shouldn't be prepared, like I said earlier.
Yeah, look, in regard to the situation in Mexico, and I think maybe we should start by talking about that tonight, is that there is clearly a crisis in Mexico, but this crisis has been occurring in Mexico long before this particular disease epidemic started. The country is in a terrible situation. They've got a social chaos from the drug wars. They've got massive economic problems. They've got massive water problems. There's a huge problem with water in Mexico. And I can read you here an article from the 10th of April, which is a little more than a couple of weeks ago. And this is one of many stories that came out in that same week. Mexico City officials have shut down a main pipeline providing fresh water to millions of residents because reserves have fallen to record low levels. The closure, due to last 36 hours, will affect 5 million people, or a quarter of the city's population. Now, and at the time, there are more articles, and I encourage everyone to Google this particular story and find, and you'll find there were a lot more instances of water being cut off than that one. It wasn't just 36 hours. They've been doing it for months. Parts of Mexico have been endemically running out of water.
Yeah.
Now, doesn't it strike you as an amazing coincidence that as this crisis with water peaks in Mexico, we get a disease epidemic? I mean, don't you think that's an interesting juxtaposition of events that might be worth some comment on the news? Because I've heard none. Zero.
Absolutely.
I mean, this has clearly got a lot to do with it. This has clearly got a lot to do with the situation. And we also know the drug wars, where people are being gunned down in the street, people are being kidnapped. Life has become very, very difficult for people in Mexico. And when life gets very difficult for people, disease epidemics is one of the things that tends to occur.
Absolutely.
And
even if it's slight, people die because they're totally malnutritioned.
Indeed.
They're drinking shocking water, which has been sort of sitting in bathtubs and such to reservoir for themselves because they don't know when the water's going to come back on. Yet none of this is mentioned in the newspaper. Papers love to sensationalize, and one person said that hundreds more people commit suicide than and die of other, totally other, thousands of other things, which are never mentioned. What about the wars that are happening? People are praising the troop numbers going up in Afghanistan now, and it's
ridiculous.
It's all out of context.
Look, folks. Google water cut off in Mexican capital, please. Investigate that. Realize that there are other issues here at work other than just some random germ that just popped out of nowhere, okay? Having said that, a disease pandemic may occur, okay? There's a lot of reasons why in a time of economic downturn with all the psychological, emotional aspects of that, people in crisis, a lot of homeless people in America, more than usual, that yes, disease epidemic is something we need to be careful about, okay? However, and this is something I want to focus on tonight as a major focus of our discussion, is that what is the correct way of dealing with influenza, okay? Because in the news, the way this is being described is that the correct way of treating the illness is to use these medications such as Tamiflu and Relenza. And I want to share with you some information about these particular drugs, which I really hope that anyone listening to this takes to heart, because these drugs have a particularly shocking history, okay? And I was quite amazed at the extreme nature of some of the effects attributed to Tamiflu in particular. Relenza is a newer one. There's less information about it because it's a newer drug. But what we find with the pharmaceuticals is they change names, they change labels, but it tends to be the same thing, okay?
Yeah, it's always the same active ingredients.
Yeah, and quite often they'll say, oh, that was, with all the terrible reports about Prozac, they said, oh, well, that was, we don't use Prozac anymore, we use the, and you find out it's the same thing, It's virtually the same thing with some minor changes.
Yeah. Different dosages and stuff.
A recent story from today. I'll just get a story up from today.
Well, look, the other thing I'd like to quickly mention and interject in there is that Baxter, U.S. pharmaceutical company, is vying for the creation of the swine flu inoculation or vaccine. And now, if the folks haven't heard, Baxter just recently has been in some very controversial stories have come out that have shipped avian flu, which is the bird flu, in some other vaccines. You know, this was reported in the Times of India and in a few other publications. But I'll just read here from a Steve Watson article on InfoWars. As reported by multiple sources last month, including the Times of India, vaccines contaminated with deadly live H5N1 avian flu virus were distributed to 18 countries last December by a lab at an Austrian branch of Baxter. It was only by accident that the batch was first tested on ferrets in the Czech Republic before being shipped out for injection into humans. The ferrets all died, and the shocking discovery was made. Czech newspapers immediately questioned whether the events were part of a conspiracy to deliberately provoke a pandemic, following up on accusations already made by health officials in other countries.
Well, why not? Initially, from a business point of view, it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Pandemic, then offer the solution.
Absolutely. I mean, the fact that Baxter mixed a deadly H5N1 virus with a mix of H3N2 seasonal flu virus, I mean, mixed them. This is the smoking gun that kind of thing was going on. I mean, because by mixing them, you are basically creating an environment for mutation, a perfect environment for mutation. And, you know, they went on to backpedal and stonewall the questioning by invoking trade secrets and saying, no, we can't, you know, so all the newspapers couldn't get any answers. And then they finally came out and said, oh, no, it was pure H5N1 in the batches. And they were sent out by accident. Now,
so this was actually, these were batches of vaccines.
Yeah.
Mm.
Now, there is no, it is virtually impossible to accidentally send out a biological weapon. You know, I mean, you don't send out vials, thousands of vials of pure H5N1.
Look, this type of story is very familiar, and it should be familiar to those listening who've investigated different aspects of the kind of what is it, the control solution reaction? what's the phrase?
Problem
reaction solution paradigm.
For folks that don't know what that means, it basically you create a problem. The people go, what's this problem? And they demand they react and they demand a solution.
And then you provide the solution, yeah.
And then you provide the solution. It's a basic principle of problem, reaction, solution.
I mean, exactly the same model applies to terrorism. You stage a few terrorist events that kill people, not in huge numbers, but in enough to really scare people, right? You get everyone worked up and you say, here's the solution. We control you more. We own you more. We give you less freedom. You know, solution. Yeah. And of course, those who own the infrastructure of government and have the power gain from that. You know, in the case of the pharmaceutical industry, well, if we can create illness, create a panic, then we can create a solution. Again, they benefit. And quite often that also dovetails with a lot of these things dovetail and merge. I mean, in Mexico, you have a situation where the government has given itself extraordinary draconian powers to detain people, similar to what they have with anti-terrorism. It's almost these things cross over, because the pandemic fear in Mexico gives the government the ability to bring in more authoritarian control that benefits them and gives them, you know, more power.
Look, so fear invokes a malleability of the civilization. You know, people become extremely malleable to ideals that they wouldn't take on if it wasn't for the fear. Now, fear can take on all sorts of things, like you just stated, Harold. You know, it could take on the face of terrorism, the face of a pandemic.
Well, we have the same situation with climate change.
Yeah.
We have exactly the same paradigm with climate change. We have a phony crisis. You know, in this case, it's more rather than sort of like with false flag terrorism where they create a crisis. This is more a hyped up phony crisis. They're telling us that terrible things are going on, and that they've been doing that for decades, you know, creating anxiety amongst the population about this threat of global warming. And then gradually now they've been bringing in the solutions. And guess what? The solutions involve taxing you, limiting your freedoms, giving the government more power. Isn't that an incredible coincidence, folks, that the same paradigm of a problem, reaction, solution, here we've seen it applied in three completely supposedly separate issues.
It's a coinky dink.
Yeah, totally unrelated. It's just a coincidence. Sure.
Now the thing is, these type of conspiratorial actions don't need to have vast amounts of people. I mean, the fact is that newspapers and journalists jump on anything that's sensational. So if one of these things happen, you know, like global warming, the whole we're all going to die. You know, that's a great story, and it's going to sell papers. So you know, the powers that be can just create some little thing or some big thing, and it'll just eat itself. You know, it just virally spreads. You know, pardon the pun.
Yeah. And meanwhile, you know, we all the real threats that are affecting us are still there, you know, and the threat being we are losing the vestiges of civilization and democracy bit by bit.
Yeah, they never talk about real issues like losing democracy, losing freedoms, losing civil liberties. They never talk about real issues like depleted uranium spreading all around the world. They never talk about the massive, you know, amounts of, you know, toxicity around us, the massive rise in cancer, the cancer epidemic that's basically, you know, strangling humanity at the moment. I mean, so many people I know have died of cancer. So everyone knows at least 10 people. You know, it's just obscene. You know, oh yeah, that gets a little bit of a mention here and there, but it's not, you know, this sort of with this vigor that things like terrorism, global warming, and now this epidemic or pandemic get.
Indeed, Josh. Look, we're just going to take a short break, and I want to get right back into the subject of the treatment for swine flu, which is extremely important that people understand that the medications that are being used here have a really, really shocking history. So we'll just take a quick break and we will be right back.
But they told me it was good for me. But they said it was fine. They told me that it was good for me.
Well, you need the proper information. I'm sorry to tell you, you obviously haven't been listening to Truth News Radio Australia.
No. But I will now.
We have voices.
Okay, we're back. I want to get into this topic of Tamiflu and Relenza. Now, I'm just going to quote to you from an article that was published today on the ABC. We're finding that the hype of infection in Australia is now increasing. But, of course, it's never confirmed. I mean, it says here 45 people across Australia are now being tested for swine flu. I mean, okay. Okay, they're being tested, right? This is a headline story from the ABC. No cases have been confirmed in Australia. Oh, okay. But there are some suspected cases. Now,
Meanwhile, 15 people have fallen off ladders and died.
Yeah. That should be investigated. Okay. An Australian epidemiologist says there is a treatment available. Hooray, hooray, if the suspected cases are proven to be swine flu. Dr. Andrew Jeremijenko says the antiviral drug Tamiflu has been proven to work. Well, you know, I'd like to get him on this show because I've got some really interesting material that I'd like to run past him, okay?
I'd like to see how he proved that it worked when swine flu only just appeared on the scene, you know, a couple of weeks ago and naturally, supposedly, came on the scene too.
Now, according to Dr. Andrew Jeremijenko, Australia is very lucky because they purchased a whole lot of Tamiflu. So we have a medicine that can treat swine flu. Hooray! Okay. It was good thinking on the government's part. It has millions and millions of doses. It was stockpiled. So we're actually in a very good position compared to the rest of the world. Well, it's great for, as we mentioned earlier, it's great for Biota, the Australian company that owns the patent. It's fantastic for them, okay? Not so good for the people who are going to be given Tamiflu. Now, I'm going to... okay, not so good if you're on the receiving end of the pill. I'm going to read to you some patient reports from a site called askapatient.com. There's just hundreds of them. It is scary stuff, folks. This is a very bizarre drug. I'll just go through.
Let me have it.
Yeah, I'll just go through randomly, picking a few here. On the third on Tamiflu. Sorry, I'm not quite sure. The third child on Tamiflu, or the third day on Tamiflu. My son complained of severe leg cramps in the morning, but this passed after a while. That night was one of the worst nights of my life. He woke up around 9 p.m. crying. I tried to calm him down. There was no calming him. He complained of severe leg and arm cramps and would not let me touch him. I asked him to calm down and tell me exactly where he hurt, but he said he could not stop crying. I asked him why he could not stop, and he said he didn't know. He would cry for an hour and a half and then basically fall asleep crying. I would nod off and he would be back up in 10 to 15 minutes screaming in pain for another hour or so. Okay, this is for a condition of flu, okay?
Unbelievable.
Now there are many, many cases like this where the behavior becomes virtually indistinguishable from psychosis or schizophrenia. It provokes some bizarre brain reaction, but also very strange physical reactions as well, such as itching, cramps, nausea.
What is it? What is Tamiflu? What exactly is it? I mean, is it a normal flu?
We'll get into that.
It's not a vaccine, right? It's a post. You take it once you have the flu.
It is
an antiviral.
It has been prescribed as I've heard. As a preventative as well, or in a situation when you think you might be going to come down with it, so you start taking it early.
Brilliant.
Okay, another case here. Horrible stomach cramping, vomiting. He is 6 years old. I called our family doctor. She recommended stopping the medication. He is vomiting, suffering from stomach cramps. Okay, another one here. My 10-year-old took this for 5 days. On day 5, both of her legs from the knees down began to feel funny, then to burn. She then said they felt as if they were being pulled apart on the inside. Oh, both legs below the knees were cold and warm. We took it to the emergency room. They said it was a reaction. 18-month-old and a 6-year-old, intense vomiting, hallucinations in my 6-year-old daughter. I mean, look, you start off with flu and you end up with hallucinations, okay? Loss of appetite. Yeah,
Why are they taking these drugs?
Well, in all of these cases, they've been prescribed.
For what? The common flu?
For the flu. Yeah, many doctors are prescribing it now for the flu. It's not as if you get diagnosed, oh, you've got swine flu, we're going to give you Tamiflu. Absolute rubbish. Japanese have been experiencing a lot of problems with it for quite a few years. Japanese doctors were prescribing it across the board, and I've got some interesting articles there. Okay, I'm going to...
Wow, well, look, honestly, it is just kind of a sick joke, really. That's why I think, folks, honestly, get yourself some storable food. And we don't often think about that in Australia because we're so isolated and we always think, well, you know, we can get food. But
now, listen to this one. Sorry to interrupt. Just listen to this story. I gave my 11-year-old daughter one dose. An hour later, she woke from a nap screaming that somebody please help her. We couldn't get her to snap out of it. It was the scariest thing I have ever seen. I did not know what to do. She was running around screaming that she needed to go home and somebody please get her home. She was hallucinating. I never gave her another dose. I threw it away. Okay, if this was just a 1 in a million case, you might think, okay, this is anecdotal, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, I'd like to move to some stories that are based on much larger bodies of research. And we'll just go here to a very recent story, which I can give you from, which was actually published in an Australian newspaper within the last few days. Although I can't seem to find that one. Sorry.
Folks, this is, like I was just keep on going from what I was saying.
Yeah.
Honestly, this is why preparedness, because you don't want to be trapped in a corner where you're coming down with something hefty from some sort of pandemic and you're pushed against the wall to say, I have to take this Tamiflu now. I have to take these weird drugs that, I mean, could you imagine the whole of us, like the whole of Australia being on these sort of weird psychotropic.
Well, this is a possibility. Out. This is a possibility if the CDC and the WHO have their way, and we're declared to be in a pandemic, millions of people will be prescribed this drug. That I guarantee you.
It's unbelievable. I mean,
Honestly,
be prepared to quarantine yourselves, folks.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, look, we'll get on to alternative ways of dealing with the flu shortly. Here's a story from April 20, 2009, okay? Just last week. It's interesting that this story came out just before the epidemic story came out, okay? Tamiflu linked to abnormal behavior. Influenza patients between 10 and 17 who took Tamiflu were 54% more likely to exhibit serious abnormal behavior than those who did not take anti-flu drug, a final report from a Japanese health, labor, and welfare team said. It will soon submit the report to a safety research committee. The link with Tamiflu cannot be ruled out. New research should be carried out focusing on serious abnormal behavior. Okay, now, What do we mean by abnormal behavior? Well, I've just given you a couple of examples of children screaming, becoming extremely agitated, but there's worse than that, folks. Suicide has been linked to this drug. Now, what I'll do is I'll just get the...
Well, it sounds like you're in extreme pain. You know, some of these people have reactions of extreme pain and would drive to the point of suicide.
Well, yeah. Although it's more than just pain, it's a nervous agitation. It seems to invoke some kind of overreaction in the brain that can lead to really extreme behaviors. Now, I'm just having a little trouble here finding the particular section. Tragedies in Japan. 64 cases of disorders connected to avian flu treatment. An expensive, hard-to-find flu drug that nations are stockpiling has been linked to 64 cases of psychological disorders and 2 teenage suicides in Japan. The drug is Tamiflu, also known as oseltamivir, which has become the world's first line of defense if the avian influenza becomes a pandemic. Okay, in February 2004, a 17-year-old high school boy under treatment with Tamiflu died after he jumped in front of a truck. A year later, a 14-year-old junior high student, also taking the drug, jumped to his death from the ninth floor of his condominium. We've had cases, other cases that I've seen, where children suddenly just start running. Like, it seems to provoke some neurological response, maybe to do with a fear response or a flight response. In the case of the first teenage death, the boy had taken Tamiflu after first being treated with an older drug. Neuropsychiatric disturbances, such as those seen in the two cases, are known complications. Okay, this is another take on it. The doctor here is saying that it's actually due to the influenza itself. Well, if you look at the actual case histories, you'll find that the children go on the drug and suddenly they have the reaction. So the claim that neuropsychiatric disturbances are a side effect of influenza itself, while that may be true in some cases, does not affect this particular case of where you see the direct link. And this has actually been discussed on mental illness websites. This is a site called psychcentral.com. Mm. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration, reacting to reports of self-injury, suicide, and delirium, added a warning to the label on the popular antiviral drug Tamiflu. After reports surfaced in Japan of children who took the drug exhibited psychiatric symptoms, including confusion and delirium. So if they've been forced to put a warning into the drug, you can't just blame the flu, okay? This is an acknowledgement from the drug's manufacturer that this could be a side effect of the drug. Mm. Three people, in this story it says here, three people fell to their deaths after taking the drug, including a 14-year-old boy who climbed atop the railing of his family's condominium. The report also tells the story of an 8-year-old boy who, after taking a single dose of Tamiflu, wouldn't answer to his own name and was growling. Another case involved a 14-year-old girl, struck with paranoia, who swore someone was watching her from outside her home and that her salad had been poisoned. This is extreme psychosis. This is extremely disturbing, okay?
And you know, they're just about to make Tamiflu available over the counter.
I find this particularly scary. I find this far more scary than the flu pandemic, this particular drug. And if you go to the site askapatient.com and read through the patient descriptions, and you see over and over again these extreme reactions. And then you read the mainstream stories, the mainstream news, where they talk about, oh, the government's stockpiling Tamiflu. How wonderful. Mm. Look, we really need to be concerned, folks. We need to inform each other. We need to educate each other. Then we need to move against these cartels of murderous big pharma organizations. We need to move against them. We need to stop it. We need to stamp it out.
Yeah. And the best way to do that is to live an organic, natural lifestyle. Eat local. Eat more organic. And really try to, rid yourself of disease by, de-stressing, living getting rid of as much chemical out of your life. And then you won't need to deal with these big pharmaceuticals, because how they try to trap you in is say, oh, you've got a cold, you need this pill. And then that gives you some sort of side effect. Oh, you to get rid of the rash, you need this pill. And then to get rid of that, you need this cream. And then that creates this problem, that problem. You get this endless cycle of constant dependency on these pharmaceuticals. Now, yeah, you know, I mean, this is a little bit different. I mean, this is a huge pandemic, and who knows if it's been engineered or not. But
if your underlying health is okay, if your underlying immune system is okay, you don't need to reduce a fever, okay? The fever is healthy. You don't need to take aspirin.
That's right.
Aspirin is often offered as a harmless thing, okay? Just take aspirin, you know. It's harmless, okay. Well, okay.
Not for children, it's not.
I dispute that claim. It does cause intestinal bleeding. And another point is that aspirin also reduces fever, and you don't necessarily want to reduce fever. You want to have that acute fever because it will help you recover more fully and be stronger afterwards. There's a reason why we have fever. Of course,
oh, absolutely, and it's a feedback mechanism. I mean,
yeah, yeah.
It's like saying, my hand is on the burning stove. I might take some painkillers instead of taking my hand off the stove. You know, you need the pain there to realize, hey, I'm doing something wrong.
Well, that's the other thing. Yeah, mechanism. That's the other thing with when you're feeling sick. Just like when you're feeling pain, it tells you you've got to slow down. You've got to rest. Okay,
yeah.
So you don't want to soldier on. Okay.
No, okay. Like with Codral.
No. No. I mean that in itself, that's such a an offense.
It's sick.
To human health that sort of thing has been allowed in our advertising system for decades.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, soldier on. You know, you can keep going away even though you're sick and your body's telling you need to slow down. No, take this and you can keep going. You can keep going as fast as you can. It is part of our sickness in society to make us slave on. This is honestly as bad as slaves getting whipped out in the cotton fields to keep on working. You know, this is the sort of mentality that, no, you know, you can keep on going.
Look,
it's not as bad as slaves. I mean, that's over the top. But we have to stop treating ourselves as slaves, I guess I'm saying, and really learn to say, no, you know what? My body's telling me stuff right now, and
well,
I'm going
to
listen
to
it.
You know what I think,
Josh?
I'm going
to deal with the pain and work through it. And, yeah, it doesn't happen overnight. And this thing with Western society right now, we want to pop a pill and feel better like that. We want to feel better straight away. A lot of natural therapies, and if you talk to any naturopath or anyone that knows about natural therapies, things take naturally to heal properly a bit longer.
You know what I think about the condition of slavery, Josh, is that I think that the condition of slavery is actually a state of mind. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to be shackled and you know, whipped. The condition of living in an enslaved state, it's quite possible to be living in an enslaved state under conditions which are quite, you know, in some ways favorable.
Yeah, well, a lot of people are enslaved to the banks through their mortgages.
Yeah.
And they have to go to work.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they default. So they're sick as a dog, but they have to, absolutely cannot not go to work. And they're sick as, and they'll just end up, you know, getting some really bad autoimmune response or something will happen later down the line. They get Crohn's or something shocking because they just never dealt with the stresses and relaxed a bit.
And there's a slavery to ideas, the slavery to belief systems, which you don't feel you have the ability to question. It's another type of slavery. It's mental slavery. There's a great song by Bob Marley, "Free Yourself from Mental Slavery." You know that.
Yeah.
Mental slavery is perhaps worse than physical slavery. It's incredibly restrictive. So, look, I think we need to take a little break here. I think we need a bit of music.
Let's play that Marley song.
Redemption song. Yeah, let's play it. We'll take a short break and we'll have some Bob Marley. Excellent, excellent.
Excellent.
This is Bob Marley. Redemption Song. Live in Dortmund, Germany.
Sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after day took I from the bottomless pit. But my end was made strong by the end of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing another song of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourself from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our mind. I've no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing another song of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Wap to wap to wap, ba 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 say, wam a to wam, ba ba de. Wap to wap to wap, ba 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 de. Emancipate yourself from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing another song of freedom? 'Cause all I ever had, redemption song, redemption song. Oh.
Okay, that was Bob Marley doing a live rendition there of Redemption Song. I don't know about you, Josh, but sometimes I find that music is the only thing that can kind of restore me to mental health.
Absolutely, man. It's the miracle cure.
You know, it's one of the few things that we can rely on sometimes to just give us the pure truth about life.
A lot of musicians fall in love with their instruments because their partners do their head in.
Yeah.
Their human partners do their head in, so they,
yeah.
Oh, I love my guitar.
It can be a true, yeah, a very true kind of, true love. But look, here we are, you know, trying to deal with this global emergency.
Now, that's a very important thing that you just said there, because I feel that this is definitely another push towards global government. You know, not only have we got a global financial crisis, now we have a global and then a global, you know, environmental crisis. Now we have a global flu crisis. everything is here to say, right, we need to take away countries' sovereignties to have a large superpower government that has control and fingers into each country to be able to dictate what happens in emergencies. And, you know, of course, everything's an emergency. So basically what they're saying is we want to dictate.
Yeah. And that, my friends, is where we again find ourselves facing this threat, the threat of the loss of freedom, the loss of individuality, the loss of the right to choose what your destiny is. This growing mechanism, this grotesque machinery of total control that they want to create as power becomes more and more centralized, as corporate and government power become fused together, as globalist organizations sink their tentacles deeper and deeper into every aspect of our life, at the same time exploiting us, at the same time as controlling us, exploiting us and selling products to us that we don't need, that even hurt us, and making us want them. I mean, that's the most shocking of all, is when you get people demanding things that are actually going to hurt them.
Yeah, demanding bondage, demanding, the flu vaccines that hurt them. It's unbelievable. I mean, I've got a friend of mine, is having problems with vaccines. He split up, and his girlfriend just, it's going to vaccinate, and he can't do anything about it.
Well, they appeal to the feminine need for protection, the instinct of a mother to protect at all costs, to not take any risks, and they exploit that deliberately, okay? They know what they're doing. They know that the women often are the ones that are the deciders in these cases. And it's not an intellectual thing. It's an instinctive thing. It's an irrational thing. And it's good in most cases. The way a mother takes care of her child is irrational. It's total protection. They won't do things that have a potential of risk, and they will do things.
No. And you're absolutely correct. And not only that, right? You had this irrational, in this case, grandparents saying, "We won't give you any inheritance if you don't vaccinate that child straight away." So the mother was kind of like, "Oh yeah, well I'm sort of reading a bit of research, but okay, I will, because otherwise I won't get any inheritance." It's kind of this religious sort of doctrine. Oh, I have to, vaccinate. Oh yeah, got to play in the hands of these, massive pharmaceutical companies. I mean, without even researching. I mean, everyone is free to vaccinate. Everyone's free to do whatever they want. Go for it.
I think there are factors there, Josh. I think there are factors deep in the psychology of human beings that are being exploited by these large cartels to control our behavior. And one is that we tend to trust what the tribal leaders tell us. It's something we've evolved over millions of years. And they present themselves as being like the tribal leaders. They have the power. They have the organizational structure. So, and it's a deeply irrational need to trust. I think it's a transference of the basic trust that a child has for its parent. It's the individual relating to the state as a child relates to its parent.
Yeah, absolutely. Or a follower has a trust to the priest,
That's another example of the same type of thing in many cases. Mm. Although, in many cases, I don't like to come across as someone who puts religion down, because there have been many cases where it's actually been religious minorities that have taken the really radical steps and have opposed the power structures. You know, that's, you know, that goes back thousands of years in so many cases of that. So it's certainly not just, oh, you know, religion always oppresses people, no. It's a particular...
But it works both ways. You know, particular... governments oppress people, and then religions try to emancipate that from governments.
And then sometimes
then
that ends
their
up...
their own power structures
yeah,
in place.
Yeah, that ends up becoming another superpower yeah. structure.
And governments yeah. try to get rid of religious power structure, like in China, because they're competing.
Yeah, so true, so true. But look, folks, as an alternative to Tamiflu, as an alternative to these medications, and as an alternative to vaccination, which, you know, I mean, does vaccination make you healthy? Is vaccination like giving you good nutritional things that your body needs? How about instead
of
that?
It gives you nutritional mercury.
Yeah, well, thimerosal, as we know, which is, you know, a fancy word for mercury, you know, which has been shown, you know, was shown generations ago. Many, many, many decades ago, to be extremely dangerous, and still in the vaccines, although it's not extraordinarily, and I can substantiate this with a quote here from an article by actually a Hollywood actor Jim Carrey, who you know you may remember from films like Ace Ventura and. You know, he's actually a major anti-vaccine proponent these days, and there's a very interesting article which I'll provide in the show notes, in which he makes the point that thimerosal has been removed from pet vaccines.
Huh, you're kidding.
Apparently, yeah.
But so the mercury has been removed from pet vaccines, but not human magazines.
Yeah.
Far out. It just gets worse.
Yeah, it's almost worthy of a comedy script, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Okay. Look, so instead of the drugs, okay, how about we eat well? How about when we do start to come down with an illness, we make sure we get some rest. We let the illness take its course. Very rarely goes for more than 3 days in my experience, and I get the flu from time to time. You know, 3 days, if you let it run its course, you don't interfere with it, and guess what? You end up feeling better than you were before you got sick, because it actually gives you a chance to rest, and it strengthens your immune system again.
It's like going to the gym for your immune system. Catching a cold is like going to the gym for your immune system. Now, I know the flu is a bit more hefty than a cold. Influenza is a pretty hefty, full-on thing. And I've come down so harshly with it once that, you know, I mean...
Yeah,
I've
and look, if
like
you do have a very
door.
High fever, you should go to the hospital, okay? Over 40 degrees centigrade, you should be concerned. Probably for an adult, it's okay. Over 40 degrees for a child, you should be concerned, okay? Over 43, it starts to get serious, okay?
Yeah, but, and folks, we're not making any claims here. We're just giving you some information to make up your own minds, to be a free human being, and decide for yourself, not to be led. You know, to see some other alternatives.
I have another quote here. Every year, approximately 36,000 people die in the United States from the average run-of-the-mill flu virus. That's a lot of people. That's 100 per day, okay? So let's get this in perspective, okay? Mm. Statistics can be very, very deceptive, especially when they're constantly being slammed onto television screens and constantly, you know, hyped up. You know, if people start getting very ill and dying in large numbers, don't worry. I mean, I'm going to be the first to say we should, you know, take precautions and, you know, protect ourselves. But in the absence of that occurring, I'm not going to just follow this group think. Okay, that's what I want everyone to understand, is that you don't have to follow the group think. Okay, so let's just agree that we can think for ourselves. Hooray. Right. Now, look, we've got some a couple of other really important issues to talk about today. And I guess in the context of this this fear of this great global plandemic, I was wondering if it might be worthwhile discussing this conservation group that actually wants to slash our population. Maybe they've found the key. Maybe that, because that article came out on April 21. You know, boy, you could build some conspiracy theories on that, couldn't you, Josh? I mean, on April 21, National President of the an environmental lobby group called Sustainable Population Australia, the National President of that illustrious organisation, Sandra Kank, issued a statement, unfortunate name.
Sandra Rank.
She issued a statement that we should reduce our population to 7 million from 22 million. Okay. Mm. And that's to tackle...
Starting with her.
That's to tackle climate change, folks. Yeah. Okay, restrict each couple to one baby, as China does. Yes, China. I mean,
First of all, let's just think about this comment that she just said there. Let's just think about it. Now, we go on about... The Jews killed. We go on about the Charles Manson killing people. We go on about, here is a woman, and we think of them as the most evil people, Hitler, all of them. You know, they are, which they are.
Well, we know the China one child policy involves aborting fetuses up to 9 months. We know that.
Yeah, I mean the, but what I'm saying is that these mass murderers of society, when you go to, tyrannical mass murdering in terms of Hitler, and then you get to Charles Manson and stuff, here we have a woman saying, we need to reduce the population to 7 million, which is a reduction of 13 million people here in Australia, around about. I mean, that's 13. She wants to kill 13 million Australians, and we don't think she's a psychopath. We just sort of go along and think, oh, well, you know, she's probably right. You know, we probably are causing global warming, or blah, blah, blah. You know, we sort of trivialize the fact that she wants to murder 13 million people.
Well, you know, to be fair on her, she's probably not claiming that. She's probably claiming that it would be done through one-child policy. But, you know, I mean, as I was saying, the Chinese one-child policy is brutal. I mean, it's led...
How dare a government force people to only have one child? What gives a group of people the right to abort fetuses? To force you to abort fetuses.
Look, it's ridiculous,
it's sick.
Folks.
It's a sick, sick concept. And I get extremely agitated and angry and upset and sad and, you know, a whole gamut of emotions.
Look, I can tell you, as well as being so cruel and horrible, it's also ridiculous. Because Australia already has far less than the replacement rate of births. We're down to something like, you know, 2.2 is what they call the replacement rate. 2.2 children.
Paying people to try and get the replacement up to somewhere near the replacement rate.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the previous government was trying to get us to have more babies. But these conservation groups very closely tied in with the global warming lobby groups. And this is what's most disturbing about it, because the global warming lobby is so powerful and so influential that when you start to see that these extremists, these kind of population eugenicists, are a part of the climate change lobby group, we really should be concerned, okay? Because we are well below the replacement rate. We've got one of the lowest birth rates in the world. To assert that we need to have a one-child policy in Australia, that's actually population suicide. We could end up just disappearing as a people if that was enforced. And, you know, this
this is something to think about, okay? Because we, with all our flaws, with all our failures, we do have some certain freedoms in this country which a lot of people don't have. I mean, we can go out and we can march on the street with placards on most subjects, and the police won't come and throw us in prison like they do in many countries.
Okay? Yeah, we can have radio shows like this.
Yeah, yeah,
that,
we can
inform people.
We can, and you know, and I mean, I'm not going to say thank you for it. I'm going to say that is our right, and we'll continue to fight for it. I'm not going to thank anyone for that. I'm going to thank the people who fought for it in the past to bring it in, to get us to this point. I'm not going to thank the government for it. It's our birthright, okay?
And it is our birthright.
But the shrinking down of our population, the shrinking down of our rights, the shrinking of our freedoms, will end all of that, okay? As will a merging of our economy with, with larger and larger superstructure that takes away our sovereignty. Again, that will destroy our freedom. That will I shouldn't say it won't destroy our freedom. What will happen is it will allow a predatory, repressive, top-heavy government to basically apply more and more restrictions to what we do. Okay.
Yeah, and when you don't like the restriction, folks, you can't do anything about it, because if you don't follow it, you go to jail. If you don't want to go to jail, you die.
Yeah. And massive population reduction of this planet will lead to the goal, as I see it, from what those who wish to bring this about, is feudalism. They want to return to a feudal kind of society, a feudal system, where we have the peasants, you know, the lowest strata of society, being the ones who produce everything, a small middle group of people who are the ones who kind of have the administrative and technological controls on the system, and the elite families who own 99% of all the wealth on the planet. And these people believe that that is going to be good for the planet. They actually think that's a good conservation strategy.
I mean, absolutely.
You know, there's these famous quotes from Prince Philip, you know, and these people who are totally out of touch with reality. You know, I'd like to come back as a virus and wipe out 90% of humanity, you know, for the good of nature. You know, that's what Prince Philip said. Okay.
Nice. What a nice guy.
And Ted Turner, the head of CNN, said something similar. You know, I'd like to reduce the global population down to about 500 million. Oh, would you, Ted? How sweet it would be, yeah.
I guess
your family and your extended family won't be part of that operation, huh?
Yeah, that's right. But, you know, let's go on about how evil Hitler was. And then just sort of trivialize these people casually saying that they want to get rid of, you know, hundreds of millions of people.
Look, folks, we can easily go to 10 billion, okay? It's been, there's plenty of studies, plenty of reports that we can easily sustain 10 billion on this planet. And we'll stabilize. The population will tend to stabilize. The population in developed countries has already started falling, okay?
Yeah. With the rise of a middle class and a more educated population, generally what happens is that, a lot of people choose not to have children. A lot of people choose to follow their careers, you know, and this is generally what happens. Some people don't. Some people choose to have kids. Good on them. But you know, like Australia is a very modern society. We have like you were saying before, the birth rate is like one to two now. So one child born to every two. So I think it's 1.2 or something. I'm not sure of the exact figures, but
it may not be quite that low, but it's definitely way below replacement rate. We're one of the lowest in the world. So this person saying we should have a one-child policy is just outrageous, irresponsible. Should be shouted down. But these little statements that come out from these conservation groups, they slip into the news. They don't get questioned. It all gets tied in with climate change, global warming, and of course, global warming. You know, the terrible, terrible threat of global warming. Oh my goodness me.
You know, yeah, even though it's cooling.
It's just so terrible, isn't it? Gee, it was pretty bloody cool today, I tell you that. You know, and it's not even the end of April. I mean, Sydney, and last year was a chilly winter indeed, okay? This year is going to be a chilly winter too, I assure you, okay? And guess what? The Antarctic ice has grown dramatically in the last few years, okay? And this is in complete contradiction to the rubbish stories that were put out that West Antarctica was warming, so they said. A few weather report stations from certain parts of Antarctica have shown increases in temperature. But guess what? The ice in Antarctica is increasing in thickness. The ice in the polar cap is also increasing in thickness. It reached a minimum in 2007, and now it is on the increase.
No, absolutely. And then, what's the answer? You know, the answer's these strange derivative of carbon cap and trade, which it's come out Goldman Sachs can lay help develop the CO2 carbon trading schemes. Which Gore denies. But this would lead to another sort of big sort of derivatives bubble, could cause another finance. I mean, these things are all such a scam. They're all such a disgusting, transparent scam. And if people can't see that, you know, they've got to honestly wake up. They've got to stop drinking the fluoride and just start, you know, really understanding how this world works. Apart from that, you've got, hardly any sunspots now. You've pretty much got no sunspots on the sun, which is inevitably going to lead to a cooling of the Earth, which apparently started in 1998. There's lots of studies to be read up upon, and we'll do a whole show about it because I think it's time we do another show about.
Oh, we'll be getting right back into that
scam. Now, one thing
we are like going to cover the story the tonight. Break. Sorry, Josh.
I think we should probably go to a break, and after the break, I just want to quickly cover the war on pirates.
Well, we do have to cover the global warming story tonight, which is pretty important. So, I'd like to continue with this theme after the break, because we have a piece on the scientist Professor Ian Plimmer, who's written a book on global warming.
Oh yeah, Heaven and Earth, great book.
Which will play an excerpt from a recent TV appearance on ABC television, and then we'll continue with pirates. So look,
bring it on.
Bring it on. We'll just take a quick break.
Arr.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now.
This book is meant to cause some trouble. This book is meant to force people to think.
Professor Ian Plimer is not one to mince words. Touring the country to promote his book, Heaven and Earth, he's declared it demolishes the science proclaiming global warming and compares climate science to a fundamentalist greenie religion. Its Bible, he says, is the latest report from the UN International Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC.
Unfortunately, I think we now live in a world where much science is politicised, and I think that will damage science greatly.
Ian Plimer's no stranger to grand confrontations. He once took to court some creationists who claimed to have discovered the whereabouts of Noah's Ark. He's also a tireless promoter of geology and of the important economic role played by the mining industry.
I'm just going to pause it there for a second. Did you hear that, where she said that he'd questioned something about Noah's Ark?
Yeah.
Now, I didn't quite catch that because I wasn't paying enough attention. Did she say that he actually questioned the biblical people?
Yeah, basically some fundamentalist religious people said they claim they found Noah's Ark and he took them to court about it.
Okay, so he's a man who values skepticism and science. I think it's really important to focus on. People could listen to that and think, oh, he believes in Noah's Ark. No, he doesn't believe in Noah's Ark, okay? He's one of the people who's interested in pursuing correct science.
Well, so, even if he does believe in Noah's Ark, he had a look at what was going on and thought it was false.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And took him to court, you know. Exactly. I mean, that's the part of science, to find truth.
It is indeed. Okay, we'll just continue with playing this.
He's a director of two mining and exploration companies, and last year he warned the industry would be wiped out by the federal government's proposed carbon emissions trading scheme.
Well, it'll probably destroy it totally. It'll create massive unemployment and we'll have a change of government.
In his new book, with more than 500 pages and more than 2,000 footnotes, Ian Plimer makes the following controversial claims. History shows there's no link between carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and temperature increase. There's no global warming. Temperatures have been dropping since 1998. Climate science has ignored geology and astronomy and has fatally flawed climate models. And we can live with vastly more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere quite comfortably. It's all happened before. But he's swimming against a tide of peer-reviewed science, including thousands of internationally renowned experts, like Australia's Kurt Lambeck, who's Professor of Geophysics at the ANU.
Yeah, stop it right there.
And who's also the President of the Australian...
You know, the thing is, he's swimming against the tide of scientists, but he's also swimming with a huge tide of scientists. You know, they make it sound like he's the only one. He's this lone ranger against this... You know, huge cabal, huge conspiracy of scientists that get together and, you know, no. He's basically, there are thousands and thousands of scientists, way more than the panel of on IPCC.
There's a really important point to be made here as well, which is continually glossed over when the media starts to engage with this question. Science does not depend on consensus, folks. Science is not about consensus. It is not about everyone getting together and saying, we all agree on the same thing.
Yeah.
That's not the way science works. One individual can change a whole paradigm. That's how Einstein came up with relativity. That's how Newton came up with gravity. Hello? That's how Galileo promoted and succeeded in the end overturning the church that the earth was the center of the universe.
No, but the church had a consensus.
Oh, yes, yes.
They had a consensus, so he was wrong.
And they had their scholars. The church had their scholars who claimed to be scientific as well. They just followed the Bible and they followed the dogma. And, they refuted Galileo and they all agreed with each other, you know. Science has nothing to do with everyone agreeing with each other, okay? So this technique they use constantly on the media that, you know, he's one person against a group, it's...
Which he's not.
It's not even true. There are thousands and thousands of people who believe what he does. So, A, it's false. B, it's a false paradigm.
Okay.
We'll continue.
Australian Academy of Science. Professor Lambeck is often cited as a key reference on sea levels in Ian Plimer's book.
He has ignored a lot of information and he has twisted, I believe, a lot of information. There are a lot of references to various papers, some of mine included in that, but many of them are simply misquoted or misrepresented. There are instances where he draws attention to what somebody may have done. That work has been long refuted in the literature, but he makes no reference to that. He draws attention to issues that questions that were raised perhaps 10, 15 years ago, but forgets to mention that these issues have long been resolved. The science...
Just to interject there, not one comment there from this fella actually draws attention to anything specific.
Yeah, it's an incredibly vague argument, isn't it? Oh, he's misrepresented something.
Something, which is then refuted ages ago and withdrawn. And then he makes misrepresenting quotes. And then those quotes aren't even... he doesn't once say, right... he mentions here that this, and in actual fact, it's this, and this. And I can prove that by citing this, and this, and this, and this. And not once. It's just these vague sort of, you know, ooh. It's just such, it is such typical ABC journalism.
Yeah, well, I mean, the guy in the interview here appears to be a little bit out of context as well. They've cut to him as part of a longer interview, and I don't know exactly what the context of what he's saying is. He's just saying, oh, he misrepresented something, or he, you know, but let's look at the full argument of what he's actually saying rather than one person saying, oh, he's misrepresented me. That's not an issue. That's not really the issue here, is it?
Well, the ABC has misrepresented him by not showing the entire interview.
Yeah, yes, indeed. I mean, let's see. We don't even know what this guy actually even really thinks, do we? We don't even know what his opinion is. So let's just continue with this.
It's sloppy. I think there's no other way. I would normally say go back and write it again.
Barry Brook, Professor of Climate Change at Adelaide University, was surprised to find his research was also cited as a footnote, even though in other parts of the book, Ian Plimer claims climate scientists have got it completely wrong.
Look, folks, this is ridiculous, okay? I just have to interject here, because in every academic book, in every scholarly book, there will be thousands and thousands of references, thousands and thousands of quotes.
Yeah.
You can always probably find examples of where some particular quote was not, maybe done to the best level of exactitude.
Yeah, the angle the ABC's taking here, folks, because we're interjecting, it's kind of hard to tell the big picture. But what they're taking is that they're basically saying that, he keeps citing all these scientists that are for the man-made global warming theory in his book. He keeps citing them all, but he's saying that they're all wrong, even though he's citing their research. I mean,
look,
yeah, like you said, Harold, scientific journals cite thousands.
We'll get a copy of the book and we'll go through it and we'll actually have a look at these references in the context of all of the other references that are in the book and see how significant it is. Now, you know, quite often as a rhetorical device, when you're writing a book on a particular subject, you will quote from the actual opposition to show that their own case is not as strong as what they think it is. And this was done with the Great Global Warming Swindle as well. That was the BBC or Channel 4 documentary that was done. And that was also criticised because apparently some of the people who were quoted were angry that they were quoted. But, you know, quite often it's a question of interpretation. Quite often if you look at what a particular person has said, regardless of whether they're, you know, a proponent or not of anthropogenic global warming, you could look at what they've said and you could make arguments from it. And you could interpret it in a different way to the way they themselves think. And that's totally legitimate, folks. And, of course, it's legitimate for them to question it and say they disagree, but that's just their opinion. You've got to get the other guys, you've got to get the author's opinion on their opinion. There has Absolutely. To be two sides to this. Yeah. And quite often you'll find that actually, well, there is room here for flexibility on your interpretation. There is not one gospel, there is not one dogma or truth related to scientific data. So, you know, data is data. Data, that's one thing. Interpretation is a whole other thing. Okay, we'll continue with the piece here.
Wrong. He said, every one of those scientists is wrong. And I say, that's an extremely bold and, I might say, arrogant claim to make. Now, he may be right that in some areas there's a lot of uncertainty and certain prevailing scientific views may be wrong. But he's saying every one of them is wrong and he's right in every case. And he's stating it in a book.
Can you believe this? This is ABC editorial decision, okay? I'm not attacking the man they're interviewing. I'm attacking the editorial decision, the camera work, the specific use of footage to basically have someone there saying, oh, he's claiming we're all wrong.
Yeah, but
pointless.
The thing is his
That
words,
is completely
right?
useless. That doesn't help me make up my mind.
the thing is, Harold, that scientist, that fellow there, he's saying that, he's making a very bold statement. He's saying every scientist is wrong and he's right. No, he's not. He's saying that every one of those scientists is wrong and all the scientists behind him are right. I mean, it's this thing of him. He's like some lone ranger.
Yeah, they're using this concept of the outsider, the person who doesn't have the support of his colleagues, who's pursuing some crazy idea. That's completely inaccurate. There's at least 30,000 scientists worldwide who agree with him. Okay.
Yeah, and how many scientists on the IPCC? There's something like 700 or something. I mean, it's just.
Okay.
And hardly any of them, you know, some of them just signed the thing. They don't actually believe what the report said.
Now, what this guy really means is that he's saying, when he says we're all wrong, he means he and his mates, okay? Yes, you and your mates are wrong, okay? You and your clique of people who are in particular positions in universities and in government who have been getting a lot of benefits from this anthropogenic theory, you are all wrong. Yes, he is saying that. And it's not such a big deal, you know. It's not such a earth-shaking, you know, question that they might be all wrong. There's not that many of them to start off with. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Rant over. Okay, we'll continue.
Not in the scientific literature. I find that quite an astounding statement to make.
And what of the claim that scientists are part of a new religious-like dogma?
Well, to be honest, scientists just think it's rather silly. I mean, to imagine there's some grand conspiracy where all of the scientists get together each year and say, now remember, stick to the party line, it's just absurd.
The claim that global temperatures are...
It's not a grand conspiracy, it's a little pathetic conspiracy of a certain number of scientists who are benefiting financially.
Yeah, I mean, the International Panel on Climate Change really isn't that many people.
It's a conspiracy of a few hundred, maybe a few thousand.
Yeah. And when there's funding and there's not that much funding out there for science, and when there is, scientists will try to find anything that will get them the funding. That's just how it works, folks.
I'm watching the video.
I have plenty
here.
Of friends that are scientists.
I'm watching the video that goes with this audio you've been listening to, and we've just cut to a very, very heart-rending scene of a polar bear jumping into the water off an iceberg that's kind of like, looks like it's one of those little icebergs that's all kind of lonely in the ocean.
Yeah, but Harold...
And the polar bear's just jumped into the water.
Polar bears don't swim, you know, they don't swim. They
rescue,
they
help,
on ice the
help
whole
the polar
time
bear,
they,
somebody.
They'll drown. Yeah.
We need polar bear lifesavers. Who wants to volunteer to rescue polar bears? Okay, we'll just continue now.
...have dropped since 1998, thus disproving a warming trend, is one of many rejected emphatically by one of the world's leading climate scientists, David Karoly.
Temperatures have dropped a very small amount since 1998, both in surface temperatures and in atmospheric temperatures measured from satellites. But that doesn't
admits
mean
it.
That global warming has stopped. The temperatures, if we average from 1998 to 2008, they're warmer than the previous 10 years or the 10 years before that or any 10-year period over at least the last 150 years.
The book is already in its third print run after only a week and a half. Margot O'Neill, Late Line.
Okay. Apologies for all the interruptions to the video. We will post that on the website. You can watch it for yourself. I think that last statement was absolutely a gem. Don't you agree, Josh?
It was such a convoluted, strange... Yes, it's cooling. It's cooling. It's cooling from the...
But only a tiny bit.
Yeah, but only a tiny bit. And it's actually, if you average it out, it's actually warming, he says.
Yes, if you average out the 10 years from the 10 years before that plus 100 years back and then, you know, add some...
dust and an eye of Newt, you get, global warming.
Yes.
Look,
yes.
Folks, I just want to state right here, right now, that I am and always have been an environmental activist. I passionately love the earth. I love my environment. For search of a better word, I have always considered myself a greenie. But I don't follow these false religiously, hyped things like global warming. I look at the poisoning of our planet. I mean, our planet is getting poisoned, folks. It's getting poisoned by poisoning. What's a better word for it? Pollution, genetic pollution, which is, you know, all these genetically modified foods, which are actually growing and expanding and really causing havoc with the natural habitats. The deforestation is shocking when planting these monocultures. Again, you know, a lot of these global warming is causing deforestation because a lot of these carbon credits will only get given to new plantations. So a lot of these people cutting down these old growth forests, these beautiful pristine old growth forests, to grow these monocultured pine forests or whatever they grow, palm leaf and all the rest of it. It just goes on and on. There is huge environmental issues, and we're not saying, you know, oh yeah, kill all the polar bears and all this rubbish. You know, I we're definitely not. We're saying that there are
appealing
scams.
To reason, sanity, you know, as well as basic human values of decency and justice.
Exactly.
Look, folks, Josh, we'll have to leave Pirates for next week because we've really run to the end of time. We've been an hour and a half tonight, and look, it's been superb. I think we've covered some really important ground. And look, we'll be providing show notes for all of these topics. And big thanks to our audience for listening.
Yeah, and please comment. You know, get on the board there and comment.
Don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid. Send us any news that you have or want us to cover to what's the best email address?
editor@truthnews.com.au.
That's right, folks. And, we'll see you next week.
We will. Good night and good luck.